All right, we're going to get started then. This is the Marysville Board of Education regular meeting of January 24th, 2011. Can I get a roll call, please?
Mr. Mabee.
Here.
Mrs. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Lassiter.
Here.
Okay, Mr. Fraker and Mr. Freudenberg are absent. Okay, will you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I just want to say play ball, because John always said that. All right, next up is the agenda. Well, there's no additions, deletions. Anybody had anything else they wanted to comment, add, delete, whatnot?
No.
Not, I need a motion then to accept the agenda, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Barely.
It's going to be a very active meeting.
Exactly. All right, next up is the staff from Bunsold. That's you.
You tap dance first.
No, I was a little worried, but since the video's working, there won't be any tap dance. I was a little nervous, but I have a gaggle of Unified Arts teachers with me, because tonight we wanted to highlight what we do in our Unified Arts program. So Mr. Galvin is our band director and general music teacher. Mrs. Josefiak teaches career consumer science and family consumer science. Mrs. Grunert teaches phys ed, and Mrs. Orr teaches technology. And really, Mrs. Orr, I'm going to turn this over to her. She's the real star tonight. But in our Unified Arts class, our 7th and 8th graders, over the course of 2 years, have art and health and family consumer science, and then the 8th grade, that same class becomes career consumer science. And then they have phys ed and general music, unless they're in band or choir, and then they have those options, and they don't take general music. And they have technology. Did I forget anything? I don't think so. So each year builds on the next one. And when you think about 21st century skills, the skills that people are looking for are creativity and communication and collaboration and critical thinking. And I'm pleased to say that I know that in our classes they have that opportunity to build on those skills. And middle school is a time that kids get to try on different hats, and so each of these is a chance for kids to try some things that sometimes they haven't been exposed to before. So I'm going to have Megan. We've put together a video. When I say we, I mean they.
Tom Powers did
a huge amount of this for us. So we'd like to play it for you, and then if you have questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Great.
Carla, you want to be the light person right here? Can you handle it?
I think so.
Well done.
Hope that trial version doesn't run out anytime soon.
Don't worry about that.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard, hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. Thank you.
you make me romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round we go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old.
Texting this loser to meet me at the park, and I'm not even going to be there.
That's so cool.
No!
Who said that?
It's me, Super Cyber Safety Man.
Give me that.
We were just playing around. We don't mean any harm.
Yeah.
Even though you didn't mean any harm, it could still hurt a person's feelings.
You should apologize to that person.
Right now.
Hey.
Okay, I will. My work here is done. Super Cyber Safety Man, away!
Stole me a dog, dear man. Go for you. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. The cry of a child. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Very cool.
Thank you.
I see your band and music programs are fairly popular.
Yeah.
How many of your kids go through the like the art programs? I mean, you see a lot. I mean, are they very popular? Or
the
like regular. Or does everybody have to go
everybody,
through?
Everybody. We don't want to say has the opportunity to take the 7th grade, 8th grade. Yes. So everybody has a chance. To
shine
to
in art?
Well, and to try it out. Because,
sure.
You know, there are kids that say, I'm not artistic. And yet they find that maybe they are. Maybe that clay is a medium they really like. I mean, part of it's the trying on those different hats. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they all have the opportunity. And you can see, I feel compelled to say that our general music class, we backed it up to really good clarinet players. General music kids haven't really had a lot of exposure, so... That for them to play the keyboards is a really cool thing because they probably haven't taken piano lessons and probably aren't or don't think of themselves as musical. And with the keyboards, it's a pretty cool thing for them.
Sure. I don't know how you in the first day of band with the 7th graders don't walk in there with earplugs in.
Who says I don't?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, but by Christmas time.
Oh, by Christmas, it's amazing.
It's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
So, no, I mean, that's... And then your consumer... Sciences, I mean, everybody takes those as well, correct?
Yep.
All of those are, mm-hmm. And that teaches kind of your life skills type of...
It is. The 7th grade is more cooking and life skills, and then the 8th grade is more careers, like what path you're going to take, and they look at some different inventories and have people from like High Point come in, and there's a little more exposure to career paths in the 8th grade.
So, for example, today we did, just filling out job applications was... something I didn't think would take that long, but it takes 40-some minutes because they have no clue. They think they do, but when they start off and they've written their name in the wrong spot, okay, you're supposed to read it. So it's those types of things, getting them ready for the real world and
right.
Trying to see which way they want to go and do they want to go to college, do they want to go technical, what do they want to do? I'm just kind of looking at those different options.
And I mean, how do you go about, I mean, do you just lay out a list of career paths and say, you know, this is what this one's about, this is what
we,
this is
we
about?
We have access to an OCIS website, Ohio Career Inventory, and it has so many different careers on it, and it gives us an opportunity. They take these different inventories where their interests lie, and then it kind of sets them into clusters, and that gives them an idea of where they should start.
Mm-hmm.
So it shows different clusters. Maybe your interest is like an awful lot in computers, or maybe health sciences. So look through those areas and see what kind of piques your interest, and then start looking at those careers and see if that's something you want to explore. So it helps them narrow down and combine those interests that they have, because there's so many things out there for them. I don't think they, I mean, yeah, we all have no teacher, doctor,
right.
But how do we get those really cool things and what's out there? So they get that opportunity to explore all those different careers. So
very cool. I like that young man washing dishes. That's
that's, right.
That's good to get those skills in life.
Those skills. Yes, it is the hard part. Washing.
And then those videos, the student videos we saw. Do you actually show those throughout the school? I mean, do they make
them
for the school? Or?
I think some of the classes did. They all. That was a 8th grade project.
8th grade project. The 8th graders do a. In 7th grade, we do cyberbullying, and in 8th grade, we take it a little bit further. Although we still do a lot of cyberbullying, but we actually address like all the whole sexting and, you know, the fact that when you put something out there on the internet, it can be there forever and you can lose control of it. And so they were in groups of four and had to produce a public service announcement about sexting or cyberbullying or staying safe and not putting your personal information out. And
how well does that message stick? I mean, once you hit the send button, that you know, you can't reel that back in.
it doesn't stick. I mean, and that's part of the thing we try to say is that, I mean, they think they're anonymous. You know, they think that because you do it via cell phone or you do it on the internet that you're anonymous. And then we try to, you know, really bring it home that, you know, it's just the same as doing it in person, if not worse, because it can be spread. And, you know, I give the example that I'm old, and you know, when if there was a fight on the school bus when I was on the school bus, by lunch maybe the whole building knew about it. If there's a fight on the school bus now, before they get off the school bus, the whole town knows about it.
Someone's posted it on YouTube.
You know, someone's you know, they've sent texts, and those texts are, you know, just the way the word travels now is. You know, so we look at a lot of case studies. I look at a lot of news articles, you know, about kids their age who now have criminal records, you know, because they sent what they thought was an innocent picture of themselves to their boyfriend, and then their boyfriend sends it on, and then they're both in trouble for, you know, basically child pornography and things like this. And that's, you know, we look at real case studies like that. Hopefully some of it. They're middle schoolers. I mean,
I imagine some of it sticks.
Some of it sticks. Yeah. Hopefully it does. Yes. Yeah.
It's just like anything. You're not going to get everybody, but if you get a handful, it's worth it.
True.
Exactly. That's just an important message.
Well, it's important that we do it.
Yes. Yeah.
Very important because, you know, we've had
issues. Yeah.
We've been down that road.
Yeah.
And probably will be again, too.
And the kids but know that. So they now know what's happened to their friends.
We haven't had very
many of that since. In the last couple of years, I think it's been better. I really do.
Right.
So I think it probably does stick.
I think it's having an effect. I'm not sure it's, you know, they're still going to be out there trying some things. They are.
That's kids for you.
They've had stupid attacks since I was. I think they all did too. At one time, your stupid attacks can get you. More in trouble now, a little more public.
Certainly more, more visible.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
do you guys have any questions?
So how many freshmen are you going to have going to the high school band next year?
Well, we will soon know. The scheduling is starting soon. So
is it 95 this past year?
Not real sure. I've kind of lost touch with the high school since the general music thing has pulled me back to months old. So I don't get to be there anymore. At this time, so it sounds like about right number.
I think that's what I heard. It was a huge class.
How many eighth graders do you have?
We got 106, 120 seventh graders, and the big one's sixth grade, 160 sixth graders.
So, holy cow!
Yeah. Holy cow. He's right up against the fire marshal on that one.
Playing out in the hallway, right?
Yeah, 160 in that room.
That's
a lot of kids.
I think we're allowed 165. Yeah, technically.
Somebody will be absent tomorrow.
Yeah. Playing the ratio, right?
That's just a tribute to the entire program.
Thank you.
Yeah, same with the choir. And in this, you know, over the years, I mean, we have our family consumer science program at the high school is just, it meets the needs of so many kids. So, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you guys didn't have any more questions, then if you'd like to go, thank you very much. Yeah, that was a great presentation. And thanks for
Kids still mentor too. At the eighth grade, or they do job shadowing?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. We've had quite a few out in the past couple of weeks, but they have an opportunity to job shadow. So we've had quite a few out there. And it's always fun to listen
to their role.
Especially when they visit the vets and we find out, when I was in surgery, that didn't last too long.
Change my mind.
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
Yeah, mine wanted to be a vet until he.
Yeah,
that.
So does she
want to
be a vet.
Let's
see. I'll send her one. Thank you.
Thanks.
Megan. Thanks.
All right. Next up is the Ohio High Point report. I saw that hard-hitting piece in the this week about the scheduling.
I didn't see that yet.
Hard-hitting.
That's what you would expect.
So they're starting their scheduling, or they're starting the visits this week, is that right?
I'm not even aware of that. Yeah, we didn't have our meeting. We had our organizational meeting this week, or this month.
But oh, okay. Gotcha.
Regular. So my report will be on the organizational meeting.
Gotcha.
We actually did some professional development prior to, which was kind of cool. They brought somebody in from BASA, B-A-S-A,
BASA.
I guess, BASA, I'm sure, I don't know. And they were, the focus was on, what was it, highly effective school board. So I don't remember the guy's name that came in and did it, but he condensed down like an all-day seminar into an hour.
Really?
Yeah, and so I'm going to condense it down into like 2 minutes. But essentially it was, they went out and looked at highly effective, you know, superintendents and school boards and, you know, some of the, I won't say less effective, but not so effective. And they kind of looked at the traits and some of the things that the highly effective school boards did and some of the one, you know, things that the other ones didn't do. And just some of the things that stuck out to me is they talked about developing protocols for certain situations. So they, as an example, they used that U.S. Airways crash landing on the Hudson, and they asked, well, how many times have he done that before in the past? And everybody said, well, none. And they said, well, no, he's actually done it 1,000 times through simulation and all that other stuff. So the thought, what he recommended was doing these, like, mini case studies with the board. So, like, talking through scenarios like, well, you had an executive session, you were told not to talk about this, you're at lunch, somebody asked you this, and walking through those situations, and then as a board talking about how you should handle them. And they're not really cut and dry scenarios either, so it was kind of helpful. Just he went through a few of them with our board, and it was kind of neat. Yeah,
sounds pretty
so
neat.
The idea is for the board to kind of work more on just standard protocol for certain situations and certain ways of handling things and becoming a more
that
professional
would be helpful.
Board. Yeah, I thought it was kind of neat. And so some of the other things they talked about was, let's see here, the highly effective boards, they expected to see improvement quickly. So like when they implemented things, they would measure in shorter time frames because we're always told that things take a while to happen, but the highly effective boards always look for progress early.
Mm-hmm.
They focused in on staff development and tying that into how it affects student needs. Community involvement, he said they sought ways to connect with and listen to the community. And then this is one I thought was really neat, is they talked about how boards regularly studied issues together, so they would actually, as a board, talk about particular issues.
During a meeting or like a work session?
You know,
or?
They didn't go into the details there, but I know like when we, our issues tend to come up as part of the agenda, you know, we don't really just pick an issue and maybe a work session or something, I don't know, but just some of the more healthy discussions, I guess, between the board to kind of, I don't know.
See where everybody's at?
Yeah, see, I don't know if about a scene where you're at, but just more of getting us on the same page or I don't know. It's one of those things. I guess it would be worth following up and finding out how they
do that. Who's that guy's name?
That.
Maybe give us
I don't know.
That.
I'll find out from the camera.
Yeah. I have the presentation. I'll pull it up. And,
well, maybe. I mean, we could certainly use some board development.
Well, yeah, and that was the other thing. I guess High Point, one more thing that I thought was neat is a data-driven decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
So they used data to identify particular student needs, and then they would use that to drive the decision making.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess, all decisions. This is a good one. All decisions were made in perspective of district goals. So they talked about how within an organization, you know, just any organization, it's going down to the individual employee, and are they even aware of what the district goals are or the organizational goals are?
Sure.
So just being aware of it and making sure everything lines up with that was something that those districts seem to do a better job of. But I guess High Point's planning on doing more of these, and they were thinking about hoping at some point getting to a point where they can invite all the homeschool board members to it.
That'd be neat.
Yeah, that would be really neat, I think. So.
Well, yeah, if they're going to start opening that up, let us know.
Yeah, definitely.
But on top of that, we could probably use...
Yes, I agree.
Our own, you know. So, yeah,
I'll find out,
maybe.
Yeah, I got the impression that that's what BASA or
what... BASA?
BASA does. So.
Well, yeah, just, they're like school board association. They do a variety of things, but it's an administrative
That's who that Rick Fenton. Rick Fenton is from. Yeah, so he's a passive guy.
Not anymore.
Well, he was a he was a passive guy.
Right. So yeah, I think it'd be worth looking into.
All right, cool. And if they vote you board president up there?
Yeah, no.
You don't have enough seniority up there.
No, not at all. It's kind of different being on a 14-member board. It's just, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
They don't hear you quite as much?
Yeah, the issues are so different. You know, we're the largest school district by far, but I mean, everybody's coming from a whole different background. And everybody brings their own particular things to the table. So it's the same with superintendents and women up there.
Yeah, it's different, especially if, you know, me, I'm one of those guys always trying to stir the pot, you know. Can't really stir it too much up there.
You need a bigger stick up there, don't you? cool. Well, thank you for that. And we'll look forward for to your regular meeting update next time.
Okay.
Very anxious. I'm curious to see how many people they actually got to visit this time and kind of see how that went. Because I know they've tracked that now for the last couple of years. Just kind of see how they did this year. So, okay. All right, legislative report.
I think it was last Thursday, House Bill 36 was introduced, moving the calamity days to 5, from 3 to 5, and letting the schools determine how they wanted to make them up by lengthening the remaining days.
Not just after 5, right?
I mean, that's my reading of it.
After 10.
Well, the way I read that, it's just they would let you do it however. Right. But
by lengthening your days or adding days on to the end, however the school board.
Yeah, you didn't have to wait those 5 days, though?
Well, yeah. What do you mean? You'd have to, I mean, if you miss 2 or 3, you can make them up.
Once you had to start making up the way I read it anyway.
It used to be, the way the law is right now, you could, until you miss day 10,
right,
you can't make it up in increments.
Right, but that's not the way I read that. Correct. The way I read that, it just said the first calamity day that you have to start making up, you can then start moving it. You know, use that time when you need it now instead of tacking it on at the end of the year when.
Correct.
You know.
And it is declared as an emergency, so once it does pass, it will go into effect immediately. And
hopefully before the next snowstorm.
Yeah, my understanding is that this all should happen in under 6 weeks. And it was introduced, I believe it was Thursday. But it hasn't been referred to committee or anything.
It hasn't been enough time yet to spend.
I don't know. These guys are moving kind of fast. They have... Representative Gardner introduced a bill on school funding that would eliminate spending and reporting requirements related to school funding system, abolishing the School Funding Advisory Council, eliminating the requirement that school districts offer all-day kindergarten, eliminate the requirement that school districts establish family and civic engagement teams, and to reduce to 3 years the period covered by financial forecasts of school districts. And that has been referred to committee, and the first committee meeting is on Wednesday evening, the 26th, 2 days from now, at 7 p.m. at the State House, if anyone's interested. First hearing sponsor.
Got a date that night.
But so they have that, and then there's an additional House Bill 21 regarding community schools that they're also going to have the first hearing on Wednesday evening.
Wow. So they're off and running.
The House is. The Senate hasn't introduced any legislation yet.
They're just waiting for it all to come from the House.
I'm not sure, but they haven't introduced anything.
All right. Good. So that's what's going on in the legislature.
That's what's going on.
Excellent. All right.
Well, those are all, from our standpoint, good things. Because, if we had to do all-day kindergarten, it would be $1 million. So, again, I'm not opposed to it, except that it just adds money.
I wonder about those districts that actually implemented it this year.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, I sat in with some of them last week.
And then, you know, now what are they doing?
But, you know, for school districts that don't have space and those kinds of...
Like Dublin, even Dublin had the problem.
And so on, you know, they would... You know, this is huge for them. And not only, you know, the operational side, but the brick-and-mortar side. They just didn't have facilities.
When I was reading through that legislation, it seems to me that it had some requirements with the tuition for kindergarten.
Well, it seems to me as though it goes back to where it was before. It speaks to
before
tuition.
House Bill 1.
Right. You have to report your tuition to the state. That's mm-hmm. We've always had to do that before House Bill 1. Right. I think it reverts back to that language.
But you can still offer tuition-based.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yes.
That's correct. If you did before. Mm-hmm. Now, that's the reading in there that I, you know, it looks to me like it puts a limit on the school districts that you can't offer if you didn't offer it. That,
oh, wow.
That's how it reads. And again, I don't. That's how I read it. So, but we do. So, and again, we have over 100 kids in there. So
it's growing.
The problem is for us is that we're going to have to register kids for kindergarten not knowing, you know, what it actually is. You know, so, but we're not going to be any different than anybody else in the state.
Right.
So we'll register folks for both. And then if we can offer the tuition-based, we will. If we can't offer the tuition-based, we'll go offer half-day only.
Looks like they're going to cut the last two columns off your forecast that no one ever looked at anyways.
Honestly, I'm not sure that makes a whole lot
that
of sense.
That makes no sense.
I mean, I understand that the State Department of Education only looks at year three. Yeah. They don't look beyond that. Mm-hmm. But from our standpoint, I think it's healthy to have a five-year forecast, actually. I think it's healthy.
Well, it doesn't limit you.
It doesn't limit
you.
We will continue to do a five-year
right.
forecast.
Continue.
I mean, we've
the
talked
other
about
that. The one that's
that.
In there that I'm not totally in agreement with is the spending rules. I mean, not reporting them, but that also takes away for if they've got putting everything where it's supposed to be in the categories in the accounting system, and that's doing away with that. So
that's part of House Bill 30?
Yeah, that's part of that. The spending rules that they've got. So,
you have to spend so much for teachers and
so much for aides and principals. Yeah, they were saying, you know, within the EBM they had it broken
right.
down. But it also, we worked a long time trying to make sure that everybody was
coding everything
the same way across the state. And
correct.
That if they take that away, nobody's going to go back to those codes and fix their codes.
Yeah,
so they're going
to
start.
Compare.
It's going to go back to hard to compare, too. So.
Now, they only did that because the EBM model's supposedly going away. Is that correct?
Well,
I mean,
realize it's going to go away.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're not forcing,
I would say parts of it.
At least parts of it. There's some parts right. in there that they didn't even touch that are extra expenditures for districts.
All right. Did you have anything else?
That's it.
All right. Next up, public participation. Anybody would like to stand up and speak to the board? Anybody at all? And all line up at once. All right. Moving on then, we have the minutes from our organizational meeting of January 10th. Now you've all reviewed those with your red pens. If there's any changes, deletions, or additions? If not, then yes, no?
No, no changes.
All right. Then I move we accept the January 10th organizational meeting minutes as submitted.
Second.
Moving to second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up, the Treasurer's Report.
I gave you a few things on the Treasurer's Report as far as we've gotten through December and all. I did give you some changes and amended appropriations for the first half of the year to get through, to get everything in line so that our books and what's sent to the county auditor are the same. So those are mainly.
Would you please remind me again, uniform school supplies?
Uniform school supplies are the fee account, and that fee account...
Anything to sell back to kids.
Sell back to kids. And the auditor, within the audit this last year, said that we should move that into general fund since we've got the mandate of free fees for those that are free with free lunches. So we're giving them special cost centers within the general fund into the 001. So that's why that's changing.
It was 009.
009. The fund 009. And now it goes back to 001.
Okay.
Because it became such a general fund expenditure for the fee waivers, That's the reason the auditor wanted it.
Yeah,
that the general fund,
and also for the gap accounting, we move it into modified accrual. It messes up those figures too, so it's just easier now to make that clean switch. So
gotcha.
We're working on cleaning that up the rest of the way. Most of the other ones are from just basically grants that either we thought about that we were going to have more coming in or less coming in, and than what we first had or first appropriated. So those are just from those grants that we had.
So in the student activity, is that more kids participated than expected?
Well, or the advisors put in more or less into the budgets than what we had appropriated at the beginning of the year.
They may have had another fundraiser.
Fundraiser
or
lack
an idea.
But those were the main ones. Increases, those were both increasing from the amounts that we originally had appropriated.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to make sure that everything is correct in there on the books, that they all match.
Gotcha.
I guess the nature of all these, for the Title I, like 60 grand or something like that, something that happens every year? Or?
It can, and there's going to be changes too. It could have been that when we first got the information back in July on how much we were going to get and then how much we had as carryover, I thought we were going to have more in carryover, but we actually spent more, so I had to decrease it. So the carryover wasn't going to be as great. They spent more at the end of the calendar, end of the fiscal year, than what I thought they were going to. It was sitting out there as an encumbrance, and they actually spent it. A lot of times it might be encumbered, but they don't spend it then. So it's just, and that then we received more in that.
Title I is operates basically off of your poverty students, your free and reduced lunch students. It's a number basically that you send to the federal government, and the federal government reimburses you for the number of those kids you have. That's how Title I is. The fees are, and funds are generated. It's your poverty number.
Got it. Does that net out with what's on the income side then, or revenue side?
Actually, the revenue side, I was closer on the revenue side than I was on the expenditure side. I hadn't put as much in on the expenditure side than what I thought we were going to have in there, so that's why. I was close. My estimates were closer on the revenue than on the expenditure side. So, yeah, that'll net it out.
It has to net out.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, you'll have a federal audit.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want those.
No. And so that's just the way.
Okay.
When you're doing that in July, it's a big guess
right at
that point. And so, especially with the grants. Yeah. And they're going to be changing here probably February when they reallocate everything. And once they get through everybody turns in their end of the year reports as of September, October, then if there's money left over, then they will reallocate it to others, or if there's not enough, they will take some away. So we just have to wait and see.
The federal year end September 30.
Yeah.
Anyway,
mm-hmm.
So you know it doesn't match up with our year, so we get estimates.
Yeah.
And then when they actually fund it, it may be different.
Yeah, their year end messes our year end up, and vice versa. Then I also received some not so great news from the county auditor this past couple weeks. And when we did the 5-year forecast, I had an estimate of our values. And then when I got the actual certified that was certified to the State Department of Taxation, it came in at $4.6 million less than that. So what I've done here is just went through and did some little calculations to see where we're at, to see what this does and how it's going to affect our forecast for this year and then the years going forward. So on this first chart, it says changes in tax values. Jim, I've got copies in the other.
Chad,
yeah, I've got copies for you too for later on. The differences in the areas, if you look there, Res Ag, our residential is down from October to December by $2 million in the estimate. And then in our commercial industrial, we're up by 295,000, 2.25 in res ag. And if you look at from last calendar year, December of 2009, in agriculture, and you talk to the farmers in the district, and they say, well, our farm grounds went up. Yeah, it has. It went up by $10 million in values, and that's mainly because of the new CAUB law and rates that they put into place when this is the triennial update year. So that's the difference from a year ago to now in our taxes. It's $250,000 less in residential. So, but that big difference there, I wasn't expecting that. When I saw it, I thought, oh man, but that's what it is. So I was not expecting that at all. Doing a forecast, I've never seen one come in this different from an October to December. It might be maybe $500,000 difference, but I've never had a $4.6 million difference from what they estimate in October than what's actually sent to the Department of Taxation. So this change affects not only this fiscal year, but next fiscal year, because taxes, 2010 taxes are payable in 2011, so that affects two fiscal years. And our split right now in residential and agriculture is about a 51% collection in the first half and then 49% collection in the second half. The next page that I've got for you is our millage rates. And this is important to understand in changes in our class one and our class twos. If you look down on our current expense, there's no difference in bond because that's the amount of money that they have to bring in, and those are the best.
Class one property is residential and ag.
Class two is
commercial
industrial. Class one, our millage rates have went down, most of them, even in permanent improvement, has went down. In our class two, in our current expenses, those have went up. So in other words, their rates have went up. So those commercial industrial people are going to see increases in their tax values. This can have a big effect because right now I had a 0% decrease in any type of change in values. As we're watching this, if you look on the next page. As you're watching this, as the collection goes up and down, it's going to give you a comparison of if it goes down any further, we're going to start seeing our collections are going to be less than what was actually voted in because they cannot bring it up above that millage. So the one levy, for instance, the current operating levy that was first passed in 2008 and now is at and is going to expire in 2012 is a 5 mil levy. It's went down in class one, but in class two it can't go down any further. It has to stay right there, or it can't go up. Actually, it should have went up. But it can't. It can't go above that 5 mils to keep bringing in at the same amount. Now, if our values keep dropping in class 1, that millage rate's going to go up. So as that millage rate goes up, if it needs to go up more than the 5 mils to bring in, we can't collect any more than those 5 mils. So if you're looking at an example, an 8% decrease, we should probably collect to get the same amount of cash of what was voted in 2008, probably be about a 5.2 mils. But we'll miss that 0.2 mils because we cannot collect any more than that 5 mils based on that. So that's why it's so important to look at our collectible taxes and to see where we're at as far as where we're going and what's going to happen to that. That's an important area to understand that. Based on that, here's what's happening. So what I've done is give you a comparison back on the bottom area The difference in the general fund from 2010, we've got $474,000 in overall. But in the some areas, you'll look at that, and it's the commercial industrials went down, residential went up, and the personal tangible went up. And that is based on utility costs. The one area, the other area that we look at and keep track of that's very important is our median market to price ratio. In that, as that goes, we're really in pretty good shape for ours. Franklin County, their median market price ratio is over 100%. What that means is that their prices really, the values, you aren't collecting that. You aren't collecting the taxes now that you've really voted on. So that's that important price median.
So you want to be over 100%.
We don't want to be. We want to get back down to where we were in 2005, right. 2006. We want to be down there in the low 90s. Yes. Last year we were really going up, and since we had that market in 2009, hopefully we'll have some more information in March. They have to submit it to the state Department of Tax here. We'll probably have it by the end of March, so hopefully we'll have that. So then, next to the last page that I've got for you is the effect on all this on our forecast and what's happened here. This is just what's happened in our taxes for those three lines in the forecast. In fiscal year 11, we're going to drop $98,000. In fiscal year 12, we're losing $195,000, and then it goes on. And the grand total over the 5 years is $817,000 in tax loss that we had no control over. We had no idea what was going to happen. So what's that actually mean based on the five-year forecast? It gives us a negative cash balance as of June 2012. So next fiscal year, just by having the loss of those taxes, tax values, the forecast is now at a negative amount. And unfortunately, I hate to be the bearer of the bad news, but that's part of my job. So Larry and I've talked about it. We're starting to look at everything and what needs to be done, and we're going from here and seeing what our next steps are. So,
okay. Well, I'll be curious about those steps.
Can we get this like an Excel sheet or something?
Yeah.
I know you, that last thing you sent out, the appropriations. I was looking for an Excel document, and I was like, because in your email you mentioned Excel, but I guess it came in PDF, but yeah. It's easier for me to work at Excel.
I'll just send it.
Okay. I'll be honest, it's going to take me a little to get my head around everything you just went over. So.
I know.
No doubt.
I know. That's why I was going to try to send it out, and I'm like, without explaining it first, it's too hard. So that's my report.
All right. Anybody have any other questions on what was submitted? Now I need a motion to accept those then, please.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Navy.
Yes. Okay, motion carries. Well, it goes quick through that roll call. <Yes. laughs> Records committee reports.
Is there items that need to be, that have been scanned or need to go?
The receipts and transportation records?
Yep. They have been scanned and no longer needed, so that we can get rid of them. Don't have the clutter.
Gotcha. So moved.
Second.
Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mady.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. Next up.
Item 8, bus driver physical and drug test provider. We've been told by Ohio Department of Education that we have to name a provider, and this is the provider we've always used for our bus driver physicals and drug tests.
We just have to officially
name that person.
I think in the future we'll just do that at the organizational meeting when we do all our other kind of standing groups. The hospital, the occupational health center, the hospital's our group. So if we have an accident or a random drug test, you know, that's where they go, and that's where they also go for their physicals.
Gotcha. Okay. So move.
Second.
Move in second, roll call, please.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Staff resignation. It's my recommendation to accept the resignation of Sherry Bickle as a special ed aide at Creekview.
Is that going to be replaced?
It's going to be replaced. It has to be replaced. Okay.
Anybody want to act on that?
So moved.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes. Motion carries.
Item 10, leave of absence. We have two leave of absence that I would recommend. These are both unpaid leaves for a period of time.
So moved.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 11, an employee of district staff recommend that the following individual be approved on a one-year limited contract for our Latchkey or SAC program as an assistant.
So moved.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries.
Item 12, supplemental contracts. You have two below, same purpose for the middle school musical. I recommend that those contracts be awarded.
Is that one musical?
One musical.
What is it?
Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock? Yeah, that's what it is. Schoolhouse Rock. I forgot.
Okay. Stumped the superintendent. That was a question for tonight.
I knew that, but
I figured you would know.
I know a lot of things. It just falls out.
Is that something they sell tickets to?
Yep.
That's cool.
Yeah.
How does that get account? I mean, I'm just thinking about the accounting side of it and just looking at the staffing costs.
The tickets are done through their student activity accounts.
And there's a pledge to participate for the staff costs. It's like the other extracurriculars, though. It doesn't fully pay for that person, but it pays for part of those people for the activity. And then the ticket sales go into for all their backdrops and their staging and the contract for that play itself and all those kinds of things. But that's how the student activity fund.
Right.
Got it. Cool.
Okay.
So move.
Second. Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
It'll be a full house every night they do it. That I will tell you. At the middle school. Those are pretty amazing events, actually. Item 13, district substitutes and home instructors. Listed below are substitutes and home instructors recommended for employment for the school year on an as-needed basis.
So moved.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 14, student teachers. Recommended that the following student teachers be approved for the 2010-11 school year. We have several there. One's on a field experience, different than a student teacher, but they're just not here as long.
Gotcha. Okay. So move.
Second.
Move in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
District volunteers. Would recommend that the following volunteers, these are all for the FFA program, be approved. And again, we recognize the volunteers so that they can be covered under our liability insurance.
So moved.
Second. Move in second. Call, please.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Mabee.
Yep.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Fundraisers. Request approval for the following fundraisers. There are several listed there.
Wow. Kids at Creekview are going to be busy.
Yeah. It's Creekview's month, I think.
Oh, moly. hat day.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Greer.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yes.
Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Item 17, what are we going to do with
that? Yeah, I'm about to say, we have to table that.
Donation to the district. Accept the following donation from Mill Valley Elementary, one smart board and projector from Mill Valley PTO.
So moved.
And Roy's on it.
And Roy's on it.
Second.
Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
And Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. How many smart boards do they have over there now? You guys napping tonight?
Probably, I would think about a dozen. Maybe around a dozen. Maybe a lot more.
Gotcha. Yeah. Sorry.
I think all those are through PCO also.
Yeah, I thought all those were. Yes. Oh, okay. I guess we're going to go with the Finance Committee discussion. I guess that moved around a little bit. I guess we have our list of, I sent that to everyone. Okay. I did. Were there any further comments other than the, let's take the top two list. Is everybody okay with those?
Say again.
The top two, the resources and offerings.
Yeah, I think that's fine with all that.
And then I guess really, did you have something to add to it before I jump into the bottom part of this?
No.
You don't have anyone to add to the list?
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, then I guess the last thing...
Stump Tracy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I thought... All right, never mind. Okay, then the last thing is whether we wanted the Finance Committee to tackle salaries.
Could we just read through the list?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We got some Finance Committee members.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure. Well, I was going to give it to them when we were done, but all right.
Right, but yeah,
okay.
So they're not wondering.
Okay. All right. Well, then things that the board, I guess, is offering direction for the Finance Committee. I'm going to take number one off, which was the early retirement, only for the fact that we're going to talk about that here momentarily. So, the items would be to identify what the minimum state requirements for the K-12 education is, as well as college prep, and kind of baseline that cost, and then work with the standards committee on all of that, to figure out, what that means and the stuff on top of that we offer. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. We talk about it a little more tomorrow night, but that's kind of the cost analysis of non-core low enrollment classes. That was kind of one that you had offered onto there, or maybe that was one that came off of this. But that's basically, I guess, what the cost analysis for whatever those low enrollment classes are. Research and compare the cost of extracurriculars and minimum requirements for advisors and coaches. Kind of do a comparison, maybe what it costs us, baseline those costs, see what other districts are doing, look for cost savings in there if possible, make some recommendations if need be. Look at potential cost savings by looking at the health, dental, and vision options that the district has. And then the last one on this section would be the special education costs and the potential for cost savings. And that, again, would be to work with the standards committee on that. That makes sense? I leave anything out yet?
The first one I still think is worth...
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, well, the first item would be the early retirement and the savings, the early retirement incentive. And the savings long-term on what that looks like. And then I kind of sectioned this out into offerings and resources just because I couldn't think of anything better to name them. It's better than legends and leaders, but not much. Okay, so for the resources section, it's really what business practices can the committee offer up that we can implement to possibly share resources with other districts or to improve our efficiencies on a business side. Investigate the option for an income tax levy in the future. I know that we've for as long as I've been on this board, we've identified an income tax levy, but we're really, it didn't really seem to make a lot of sense, but I think it would be nice if the Finance Committee just kind of looked at that and just kind of talked about it anyways. The next one would be to review and study the effects of the state budget and how to plan for it, possibly suggest expected yearly costs and the revenue on the opposite side of that to support it. Just kind of look at both sides of those. And then lastly would be the leasing of the east to the Hope Center. Just kind of long-term, you know, kind of look at that. Is that right there?
Yeah, I think so. Okay.
Do you have anything to add to that?
No.
Okay.
I don't have anything to
Okay. And then the last part of it, as I was speaking before, was we wanted to know, you need direction on whether we want you to look at salaries, district-wide on study those. And I think Doug and I had a discussion, I'll just throw my opinion out there. I believe that conversation belongs at the board level, and I think the board needs to be, every board member needs to be actively involved in those conversations continually. And so I wasn't really in favor of pushing that down to the finance committee side, but I would do what the board directed us to do. I just didn't feel like we should delegate that particular section of our responsibilities down to the finance committee. I thought that was something that we should be actively involved in.
I think it came in, that item came from the recommendation off the...
Yeah, no, I know.
Well, and it talked about the salary schedule, the split salary schedule.
Right.
And some things that, you know, if you look across the state, there's not a whole lot of creativity when it comes to the salary schedule. I don't know when our board has ever talked about that salary schedule in an open meeting.
Right.
And I guess that's the point, is that I think, you know, if you look at the community and the taxpayer,
right,
you know, they're really looking for, us to have creative thought on that kind of stuff.
But the salary schedule had been changed by this board a few years ago when they changed the indexes. So that was done at the board's level.
I understand. But we talked about, when we were talking about the negotiating committee, the board's really not actively involved in those discussions. And so my thinking is, you got some, you know, people that aren't within in the box, so to speak, that can provide some creative ideas. Think about it, talk about it. So I'm not saying that they even have to, it's not like they're going to, I don't even think they want to provide any recommendations to the board. I think they just want to give ideas to the board. Mm-hmm. And I think the more ideas we can get that come from outside the box, outside of the, you know.
I know. My take is, I just don't want the board to be outside of that loop. If there's that conversation on everybody, I think everybody would benefit.
Sure.
To be inside that and not to be, you know, it would almost appear that we're pushing that out to let someone else have that conversation and then to come back with us because...
I mean, what they come up with could be a starting point for discussion. So, and if nothing else, but
would that be a subgroup?
Subcommittee?
Yes, subcommittee of the finance committee.
I suppose it probably could be, sure.
That would be my only idea or thought, would be to have, if there were a subcommittee of the finance committee, that possibly they could work with the entire board on some, you know, kind of like a work session brainstorming.
Yeah, you know, and I would be okay with that, I think, if it were.
My only concern with that would be the fact of logistics. Getting schedules to line up, and, if a subcommittee may decide they want to meet twice a week to really drill in on something like this, as opposed to trying to line up schedules with the entire, I wouldn't want to make that a requirement for their meetings. I'd rather they have the flexibility to meet.
Okay, I think those conversations need to happen at the board and the administration and everybody sitting at the table. I just do. That's just my take. So if we can't get a consensus on that, I don't know. Tracy, what do you want to do?
Well, I haven't been involved with the finance committee, so I don't know.
Well, it's just
how
a general
planning
just
on them operating. I mean, would that be something you would expect, that they would be meeting twice a week?
Well, I would expect that they would have more flexibility to meet based on their schedules and not ours. That the subcommittee would be driving those discussions. They would be able to set the agenda. They'd be able to decide how many times they need to meet. I think if you make the requirement that the entire board or a quorum of the board is available for those meetings, I think that just bogs it down. That's my personal opinion based on being on that committee for It's hard to get people to show up to this.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
I saw the attendance list.
And I think the goal is to, we need some help in terms of our financial situation. So I'd hate to turn away good ideas just because we feel that there's some, I don't know, that somehow the board has to be driving all that. I don't know.
Well, it is the board's decision how that works.
All this stuff. I mean, I'm not a big fan of them passing off an income tax levy discussion. I didn't even like that idea. But,
I know.
You know, I figure if that's something that, you know, you'd like the committee to look at, then that's fine. But, you know, I think this is a big ticket item. I think if you ask that committee, they would think that salaries were a big ticket item.
Obviously they're 60-some percent of our expenditures.
Yeah.
Which is why I think everybody at the board table needs to be in, you know.
But to take off the big ticket item, say, hey, we need your help. We'd like some ideas from you guys. But, hey, we're going to take this item off the table.
You know, what would be a better use of our time would be what do they call that? Like a labor management group. You know, where you sit down with members from the MEA, members from the administration, and members from the board, and possibly members from the community to sit down and talk about those things and get ideas from everybody. So,
I mean, I don't mind having that kind of forum, but I just, you know, just based on my years of experience with brainstorming, I think I like the idea of having a group of people that are on the outside that don't have the educated incapacity of how things are supposed to be, offering creative thought, and they may come up with ideas that are just not doable. But the point is let's not squelch their ideas before they even get a chance to provide them. So I don't.
It's up to you.
I still like my idea,
which is I'm okay with that too. But that's you know that's a board meeting with the subcommittee, which is kind of the. Which I guess is the intermediate between board Doug
between,
and I, right?
Yeah, between it. So it's like kind
and I'm okay with doing that too. I mean, that's if we can figure out a way to do that, then let's.
As long as we don't require everybody in the board to be there, I mean, I guess that's the point.
All right. Well, then let's.
It's easier for me because I don't have to travel with business.
Yeah, so I don't have travel with business either.
Well, you guys do, but you know,
unfortunately,
you guys have
another
to.
Month.
Yeah. All right. So can we table that then until we have the full board then, and we can talk about how to go about doing that and have the finance committee focus on what we've put out in front of them?
Yes, that would be fine with me.
Okay, what you were going to add to that?
What the extracurriculars.
Yes.
I was wondering about that too. If we couldn't have, if a subcommittee of the finance committee is looking at the extracurriculars, if we could possibly have a board member or two who might be interested, kind of involved with that to some extent.
I don't see why not.
You
are you raising your hand?
I am raising my hand.
I figured.
I'm just questioning this whole thing about getting the board involved in the finance committee. Is the idea that we want the board to be driving those discussions, or is the idea that we want the board to be aware of the discussion?
I want to be aware.
It's an open meeting, so why can't we just say that the board can show up to those meetings? I mean, I'm trying to understand what we're afraid of to let this committee go off.
That's something I'm particularly interested in, and Cindy has started to put in place from last July to try and get a true and exact accounting of, you know, what exactly all the costs are involved in the extracurriculars, you know, from the busing to the bus driver and all of that. And that's something that is of particular interest to the community. And so
you'd like to be part of those. Yeah.
I don't want to drive it. I just want to be aware.
Sure.
That's it.
And I'm fine with that on both those things. Is, you know, if the board members want to be involved in those discussions or be there, then I don't think see a problem with it. I'm just kind of getting the impression on at least the first item that it's we want the board to be driving those discussions.
I'd like to be the board out in front of those discussions. I mean, we're the one. I mean, that is that leads up into negotiations. That leads, you know, where this district is going and what we're doing. And honestly, we were voted in to these positions to lead those discussions.
Right.
And I'm
to make those decisions.
Well, either one, Doug. I mean, I'm not ready to hand that off. You know, I'm just going to delegate it out to the committee and say, hey, come back to us with a couple ideas and we're going to move forward. I just don't believe in that. I mean, I believe, you know, if we want to work together on it, that's fantastic. But you know, that is the biggest chunk of our expenditures that is going to affect us for years to come. I don't want to take a back seat to that. I just don't. And that's my feel.
Then I think that we need to, if that's the direction the board wants to take, then I think we need to make a commitment to spend the time.
I'm more than okay with that.
Okay, I am too, so that's fine.
I mean, we should be doing that. I mean, I don't think there should be a... Yeah, I agree. I'm there.
So. My biggest concern is, you know, you look at... Well, anyways, the community has us... On one side, I mean, we really are the ones looking out for the best interest of the community as the board.
Correct.
And so, you know, if you look at the negotiating table, on the one side of the table, you got a professional organization that has full-time resources, lawyers, negotiators, years of experience. And then on the other side of the table, you got five part-time board members that are trying to find creative solutions and look out for the best interests of the community. And we have we have people in the community that are willing, that have CPAs and business experience, that are volunteering their time to help. And I feel like, you know, we're kind of...
If they want to work with the board, I don't understand.
That's fine.
I mean, I think that fills that void.
Okay, whatever. That's fine.
Okay. So is that all in the finance then?
So where do we end up on that? That list right there.
That list and then.
So are we tabling this till Roy and John are back, or is that what we're going to do?
No, I figured that's what we were going to. I mean, okay. That kind of, it's basically what you had talked about doing, and then we'll definitely have to talk to John and Roy about their commitment to doing that. So.
Okay.
So much for the finance committee stuff. And we'll break down into that tomorrow night. You want that list?
Tomorrow.
I'll bring it tomorrow. Okay. All right. Next up is the staff retirement incentive.
Well, we discussed this briefly over the years. I sent out a proposal to you for a retirement incentive. The issue is, you know, as we're looking forward and being trying to figure out some creative ways to kind of create a cash flow situation. We did this once before, or a couple times before, but once before significantly. And it made a huge difference for us. We didn't have to go through a RIF. We didn't, you know, we eliminated people, eliminated positions, and so on. And I'm not sure what kind of situation we're looking at from the governor's cuts. I just don't know. I mean, I spent a meeting last week in that, and nobody still knows exactly where it is going to be and what is it going to look like and those kinds of things. But even if there is no cut, I mean, we're looking at some fiscal constraints that we have to recognize, and we've done that, I think, very well. But with operating at the millage rate we're operating at, which is low, and the costs being what they are, some increasing and some maintaining, we thought that it would be a good idea to offer some type of an incentive to really lower the salary of the staff, trying to avoid the layoffs and program cuts. Because I will try to do whatever I can to to maintain what it is we are in the program and extracurricular programs that we operate and those kinds of things. I think it's what we have to look at all kinds of different options in order to maintain program. The program we saw tonight at the middle school, those are all non-core, but create a huge opportunity for our kids. Many of our kids end up spending their lives in those professions, and to have that experience that early is important, I believe. So what you have before you are is a incentive that I believe makes some sense. I've worked some with NEA. They will still have to sign off on this, but the first step would be the board in looking at this. For bottom line, what it does, you know, if the assumptions are what the assumptions are, you know, again, they're assuming that 36 staff members would take the retirement incentive.
Was that our number or was that their number?
That's what they think.
Based on just years of experience and kind of
what they
and how many people are actually qualified?
Well, much more than that.
60s,
100,
almost 100.
Was it 100? Maybe that's. I saw that number somewhere. I just don't.
Yeah, it depends on if you're part one or part two. You know, there are some that are over 10 years that aren't necessarily retirement age or retirement qualified,
right?
Let's put it that way, because you can qualify for retirement in several different ways. But they're assuming that 36 staff will do that. I don't know. You know, it's. But even if it's, let's say that's 20. You just back off the number, but it's still a significant savings to the district.
So, what's the point of diminishing returns on that?
Well, we would have to see that when everybody has done it. I don't think there are, to be very honest, Cindy and I have talked about this, I don't think there are any diminishing returns necessarily.
Well, I mean, if we went with their, and I'm just as I'm reading that, you know, if you had your average four people retire every year, you're automatically going to save $300,000 by doing nothing.
Right.
So at what point do we get down where it's just cheaper just to
not do anything.
Not to do anything.
Four.
Okay.
you're gonna.
It's got to be more than that because there's planned costs in there and stuff like that. I mean,
I would say probably 10.
Okay. I mean, that's.
But it's still about too many more than that.
It's adding like $45,000 cost to every person that let go, right? I mean, any person that takes this option, you're basically adding $45,000 in additional cost to that person. Right?
Correct.
So, like, if they were with the district for 10 years, that's an average salary of $4,500. It's like a 10% increase on what their salary was over that course of the 10 years. I mean, it's $45,000 isn't insignificant to be adding that cost.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that. But at the same time, your return is immediate.
Well, yeah, it definitely solves a cash flow issue. I guess my concern is, you know, if we're saying that we can do this with the 36 staff and still maintain, you know, highest possible educational standards, okay, then the question is why are we in a position where it's more cost effective to add $45,000 additional cost for 32 employees?
Because we aren't doing it in 1 year. It's over.
Well, no, what I'm saying is you're, to me, it says there's something broken if we're saying that it's more cost effective for us to go back and add $45,000 in cost on service already rendered and hire new staff, and we're still able to provide the highest possible educational standards with this newer staff, the replacement staff, but yet we're adding all this additional cost to the staff to the services they're already provided.
Well, but they don't start paying until next year. So if they made $80,000 next year, say they were an $80,000 employee, if I read this right, so next year they wouldn't get that. They would get a third or a fifth of that $45,000 because it's paid out in 5 years.
Okay, so 5-10 years from now, are we finding ourselves in the same situation? So my point is that if we keep finding ourselves in this situation, we're essentially just adding an additional, I don't know, rough, depending on person and salary, but 10%, 5 to 10% to what our salary costs are just for this cycle that we have, because we're not fixing what's putting us in this situation.
What's putting you in this situation?
Well, obviously, it seems to be that we have a diminishing returns on, as staff moves up through our salary schedule, they get to a point where the value for the additional dollars isn't the same. I mean, we're not getting the return on the dollar from the additional value.
I totally disagree.
Well, I'm just saying,
because you're going to lose some quality folks. I hope you can replace the quality folks that you end up losing. It's no different than business or industry that offers an incentive for retirement.
No, I understand that.
None at all, because you're never quite sure. It's a gamble. It's a gamble on our part of whether you're going to be able to reload the gun with the same caliber.
Well, I'm just saying the first statement in our resolution is that we will be able to maintain highest possible educational standards. So my point is, if we're making the decision saying, hey, listen, this isn't going to affect our educational, the value of education we provide to this community, but yet we're going to save a bunch of money by paying this an additional $45,000 per employee for services already rendered, it just seems to me that there's a problem there that would need to be fixed. We'd like to get in a situation where you wouldn't have to offer this additional $45,000.
The situation would be then you pay everybody the same every year, basically.
I mean,
that would be the way to fix it. You would start everybody. If you want to fix it, start everybody at a higher salary and don't accelerate them as much over the years.
That's exactly what the thought that came across
mind. But your starting salary is going to have to jump up a whole bunch because what happens is that traditionally in education, that you start your lower salary doesn't equalize what a professional makes generally. And therefore, it takes some time to gain that, and then the disparity over that is that. So the only way to do that is to shrink somehow or another that.
That's exactly the kind of thinking I was hoping that we could get when we do this.
But your starting salary has, our starting salary is low in comparison with other folks. So we almost have to go to mid scale somewhere in there, 7 years or thereabouts, to start being competitive. But it's still not necessarily competitive with everybody around. But if you want to get that lower, then these kind of plans wouldn't work. They wouldn't. Right. They just wouldn't.
No.
Right.
You would have to find somewhere else to be creative in looking at that. I mean, STRS is probably going to take some of these things and make them very difficult, because as a board, I think we're all going to have to pay attention to the STRS rules that they're bantering around, because they're going to require 35 years. They're going to require
60.
It. And age 60.
Age 60.
And from a retirement standpoint, that means you're going to have people at the top longer from a retirement standpoint. It's going to be more expensive for your local boards. There's absolutely no question in my mind.
And my thinking is, okay, let's say there is a we're able to fix this, because there is an issue. I mean, when you have to fork over $45,000 to make somebody,
but Honda did the same thing, or industries do the same thing throughout.
36 people. Anyways. Let's say there's a salary schedule that resolves this. The only way you would be able to implement something like that was the idea of a split salary. New people come on to a different salary schedule.
Oh, then that's not the only way.
Well, that's probably the. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, you could redline. Basically, you're talking about redlining.
I don't know the terminology.
That's what it's called.
Okay.
So everybody new comes in at a different scale than you're.
Yeah.
But what's it? Where are you going to put them? And where are they going to go? That's the issue.
Well, no. My point is if you'd want to have that in place before you would offer an incentive to these other people, because you're replacing 32 staff. People are, this one projection has us replacing 32 people. So before replacing those 32 people, let's look at, how do we fix this so we're not in the same situation 5 to 8 years from now? I guess that's my thinking, that's all.
Okay.
And that's why I was kind of looking for, it'd be nice to have the finance committee to look at this and have, you know, CPAs and CFOs
sure.
and other people that do this for a living looking at it and offering their feedback.
Sure.
So. Were we going to vote on that tonight?
It's on there as an action item. What's the next one? Yes.
Could we, I mean, is it a possibility to get the finance committee to look at this and offer some
long-term we could, but we got to, I mean, the schedule, I mean, they have to have, working backwards, they have to have 45 days to, is that correct? Have to have 45, it says 45 days to consider the plan, followed by 7 days of revocation.
Your contract issues are.
I mean,
we looked at something that I believe makes some sense from the April 30th deadline for a contract standpoint. Because as a board, you're obligated to the April 30th deadline for renewing new contracts. To try to make some of those decisions for staff, whether they're going to come back on, as a. And some of these folks may be on continuing contracts, maybe not. But to have it done before your contract deadline. You know, if we went out a month, it messes that up. But could it be done? Yeah, it could be done. It just needs, if we're going to do it, you know, or not. I don't, you know, this is, to me, this is one way to try to do something different besides just program cuts and program differences or slashing everybody's salaries or whatever becomes the issue of the day. You know, that's kind of where you know, the thinking is behind this.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder about, you know, Doug's comment. You know, if we're going to fix that long-term problem, there's no way we could do it by next month, even if the Finance Committee looked at it. What?
You'd have to negotiate that.
I mean that's
right.
I mean, so it's not that that's. I'm not saying that's not a good idea or it's not something we should look at, but I don't know how we could possibly do it.
Sure.
In the next month.
But then I spent probably a few hours looking at it, and I don't do this for a living. But just looking at it, I'm thinking this doesn't seem like it's good long term. But I would like to have. I mean, it would be nice if the Finance Committee could look at it and offer us a long-term picture of what this, you know, I don't, I just.
I mean, I don't
know.
That's
where I'm at, but.
I mean, we pay that off in 3 years, and then everything after 3 years is basically everything off the, you know, off the general fund. Make sense?
I know what you're saying. Yeah,
I mean, it seems to me if we're gonna, you know, we have a short window of time to make a lot of adjustments that are coming up. You know, given what the state's going to do, and there's not a lot of time or room to maneuver. And as I read it, you know, I'm okay with doing that. I think we've done a pretty good job of hiring some of our younger teachers. Certainly, all the ones that I've met seem to impress me as pretty good people. And there seems to be a pretty good market out there now for good teachers. So I don't think I'm all that worried about replacing those. So that's my take. What say you?
Will it depend upon who takes the offer as to who will be replaced, or is your intent to replace pretty much everyone?
The intent is of the 36 to replace 32. But as I said before, it just really kind of all depends on
who
and what, and whether, you know, what the kid, you know, we're at the same time, we're going to be going through high school scheduling. We're going to be taking a look at that. At the same time as this is occurring, we're going to be maybe hearing a little bit more from Columbus, knowing what we should be doing as far as, you know, some program adjustments and those kinds of things. So
it's my intent not to replace everybody, but it just really will depend.
All your French teachers go away, right?
I just, and every, you know, it's okay if we don't want to offer French.
Right.
But you got to turn off a lot of kids away.
All your English teachers retire?
Yeah, exactly. It will depend on
the Mandarin
learning.
Chinese.
Yeah, that's Mandarin exactly. Chinese,
yeah.
People are learning.
Yeah, I can cut the Mandarin Chinese people. Yeah, it says we don't offer the program anyway.
Well, no, I was saying that was would be something different, right. A different language, perhaps. People are learning. Well, is this something that the Finance Committee can look at?
They can, but I'm not sure what. I mean, if I look at it, what are they going to, given the short amount of time, what are they going to offer us?
Recommend whether we should hold off or go forward.
Well, my recommendation is that.
Hold off or go forward?
No, my recommendation is to go forward. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know whether I matter as much as the Finance Committee or not, but that's kind of the recommendation in the seat I sit in. I've got some decisions I have to make about the finances of this district. That's my job.
Yeah, I'm okay with moving forward with it. I mean, it would be nice if the Finance Committee could look at it, but again, at the end of the day, they're going to make a recommendation, but they're not the end-all, be-all.
No, they're not.
With all due respect to the Finance Committee.
Sure, and all due respect to Larry, too, but the point is we have a Finance Committee for another perspective. And, I mean, otherwise, why even have them? Why even have a Finance Committee?
Right. Well, they seem to have a list of things that they could certainly be on.
If I would have known that before now, we could have had this in front of them.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, looking back, I wish this was something we would put in front of them.
I could have easily have done that.
I don't know.
But I'd prefer moving forward.
Yeah.
And again, I understand there's three board members here, but
and from experience, these have worked in other districts completely, and has gotten them from having a negative cash balance to having a huge cash balance for more than 5 to 7 years. So yes, they do work, and work quite well when you take them out in these kind of numbers, and it lasts for years.
Well, it looks like
it
looks like at the end of year seven, we're still saving. If the 36 go accumulated, you know, we're still saving. Where's the total?
6.6.
600. Well, the cumulative, it saves us $6.6 million. But even at the end of year seven, we're still in the positive $600,000 that year alone.
Correct.
And that's if we did both classified.
Right. That's both.
Even if we just did professional staff, that's $435,000 at the end of year one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Year eight, 8 years out. And that's based on, you know, if you're bringing them in, is that correct? If you're bringing them in year five, and that takes into account their growth by our current
salary
staff.
That's taking into consideration of how many would have retired, given our retirement numbers, those kinds of things. If there would have been normal attrition through that. So all that's in the calculation.
All right. Well, let's just put it to a vote. Either do it or don't.
So moved.
Second. Moved and second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Lassiter.
No.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
And I will work with Juliet. We'll get this out there. We'll bring it back.
Okay. Anybody else would like to address the board before I close it down for the night? Okay, if not, I move we adjourn.
So moved.
No, you second. I move. You second. I move.
Oh, I'm sorry. Second.
Moved in second. Roll call, please.
Mr. Mabee.
Yes.
Mr. Lassiter.
Yes.
Mrs. Greer.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries.
Next handouts.
Oops,
problem one, you didn't show up.